everybody. This is Akira. I am so excited to talk to Corey Knockreiner. He is the CTO of WatchGuard Technologies, and he also is the man behind Mr. Robot Rewind, which is pretty much my go-to column for after every episode of Mr. Robot. If I ever find myself having an Angela, what's a rootkit moment, Corey is definitely the guy that I go to. So I was so excited to just be able to connect. You know, we've connected a little bit on Twitter, and then all of a sudden, Anthony, your PR rep, reached out, and we just decided to finally stop being just Twitter conversations and just finally get a vocal conversation going. So, all right. So I have Corey with me. So excited to have him. And I'm sorry that Logan and Ryan weren't able to join in, but they were excited to talk to you as well. So we just kind of formulated some questions for you. And I know that you're a huge fan, especially for the fact that this show gets the technology and the hacking and pretty much everything right for you.
Yeah, I mean, they've made one or two tiny little missteps, but every time I see something that's a misstep, I can almost see it's more because it's not because they don't know the right thing, it's because they're trying to drive the story. I mean, being an InfoSec security expert, I always judge the heck out of any media that tries to do hacking, and for the most part, they do it very badly or it's boring. And somehow, Mr. Robot not only keeps things accurate, but they keep it exciting as well.
Okay. But you mentioned maybe like one or two missteps. I know that you and Core have talked about most recently with the latest episode with Angela's rubber duck hack. I think some other people may have had this concern as well. There was some concern about the fact that we didn't know necessarily if the screen was locked or not and if the rubber duck hack was going to actually be able to go through. So I know that there was that one. And what was your other, maybe one other mishap that kind of, that you noticed that, well, that may not actually be true or accurate, but for the most part,
but there isn't that last episode, so we're talking, I call it episode 9, although if you look at their episode titles, it's kind of episode 7, because they start at 0.
Right.
But besides the rubber ducky, by the way, everything about that rubber ducky hack is fairly accurate. The tool exists.
Mm-hmm.
The exploit they used to steal passwords from memory, something known as Mimikatz, is something that pen testers have been using for a long time. It's part of the Metasploit framework, which is an open source exploit framework that, you know, they've actually showed in the show. So all that was accurate, except for the one little misstep is the rubber ducky is just kind of like a fake keyboard. If you plug it in, it can do anything a keyboard can do. But that means if you're at that lock screen where it's asking for a username and password, it can't really open command prompts. It can't do anything till it's passed the username and the password. So because we didn't see, in this case, I believe the guy's name was Thomas's screen, it's hard to really know if that hack would work. If this guy left his computer unlocked, it would have worked just fine, just like the show showed. But my little argument was it's rare in a business location that you see a screen that's not set to automatically lock after a certain period of time.
Mm-hmm. Okay. That was something that I wanted to get in touch with you also, because I've also watched the DEF CON 24 panel that Mr. Robot had. At the recent conference, and that was something that Jeff Moss, aka the Dark Tangent, that he mentioned as well, because that he wrestles with being such a huge fan of the show and maybe being so into the hacks and watching them for the accuracy, and maybe, you know, you want to make sure that they're getting it right, but you also don't want to get to the point where you're just, like Jeff said, oh, you might have missed a comma here, or there's some typo here. So have you ever, how often do you ever find yourself in that mentality as well? Is that pretty much every week that you're watching the episodes?
Well, now that I know that they're trying to get it right, I mean, if you listen to the DEF CON panel, you know Core, Donna, and team, mm-hmm. they actually worked very, very hard on the accuracy.
Mm-hmm.
So now that we know they're doing that accuracy on purpose, it is kind of fun as a pedantic nerd to pay attention of it. So I think part of the reason I look so closely, even for any accuracies, is really in part by love. You know,
mm-hmm.
I wouldn't pay so much attention to detail if I didn't love it. In fact, the only time I've ever had pushback was I was actually, for instance, that US Rubber Ducky hack. Before I wrote my article, I went to Reddit, a very common Mr. Robot sub on Reddit,
yep.
And I actually asked if anyone else had seen in the same misstep. And I do admit one person said their answer was quick, you know, do you know what suspension of disbelief means?
Yeah, I did see that.
Exactly. So there's certainly a part of the people of the show that love it so much they don't want any naysaying, but I think what they may not realize is part of why people like me and others are looking so closely is because the show is hiding things. The show is adding this accuracy, and it's kind of fun to look at. And the other ulterior motive is really on part of why I do this Mr. Robot Rewind. Now, mm-hmm. I don't imagine Sam Eshmael and crew made this show to teach. This is an entertainment show. It's for fun, but they're actually showing lots of very legitimate portions of not only computer security, but privacy, government implications. A lot of the show is so accurate that I believe it's a good opportunity to learn from. So by kind of dissecting the hacks, not only is it kind of fun to show the detail they have, it's also kind of good, I think, to kind of set the people that read my articles, their fear of risk to a certain extent. Yes, a lot of these hacks are scary.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, a lot of them happen in real life. But do realize there's mitigating factors. Do realize, you know, just knowing the phone number of a cell phone isn't going to allow a person to take over your phone. That's actually a very rare case and a difficult hack. So I think part of the value of looking at it in so much detail, even when I'm pointing out some of the missteps, kind of is the point of it is to help share some security expertise and have the audience realize what the real risk is so that they can set their protections properly.
Okay. And you definitely do an amazing job. Every week I'm reading your, throughout the show, I'm reading your article, and then also with your predictions as well. I mean, you are pretty much knocking it out of the park with your predictions there as well. But to backtrack with the beginning of the, pretty much how it all started, how did Mr. Robot Rewind start for you? I know that you have a background of writing educational articles, and you also have daily videos, which I went back and watched a few of them. You definitely helped me out with the Sony hack. I remember writing a quick paper about it for grad school. So you were a great reference there. So how did Mr. Robot Rewind get started for you?
Well, as you mentioned, you know, besides being the CTO of the company, I'm kind of like, I follow information security quite a bit, and I do my daily video. And as a result, I've written a number of articles for places like Dark Reading and HelpNet Security. And one of the series I started is, you know, besides being a security nerd, being very passionate and nerdy about security, I like pop culture. And I think a while back I realized the value that mixing pop culture with security can have on education.
Mm-hmm.
So I started a series which was What You Can Learn from Information Security from The Walking Dead. And then I did Game of Thrones. And I even did video games like Destiny. So very popular pop culture subjects that people like. And while Game of Thrones and The Walking Dead, unlike Mr. Robot, have nothing to do with computers,
mm-hmm.
there's a lot of parallels you can draw as far as security. So I think it was that pop culture series that kind of started us along the line of using entertainment as a way to get people to kind of sneak some education into it.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, you know, when I first watched Mr. Robot, you know, one of the, if you follow my daily videos, when CSI Cyber came out, a lot of folks in information security were kind of interested, you know, a show about hacking. But I got to tell you, I watched the first episode of that and I hated it so hard that I never came back. But when Mr. Robot came out, I immediately was interested. And once we figured out how interesting and good this show was, folks like Anthony, you know, some of the PR folks helped me hook up with a relationship we had with GeekWire, and we started this article series.
Okay, great. And then, and really with Mr. Robot, every fan has their one, they can pinpoint that exact moment in the show when the show just had them hooked. Most people say within the first 5 minutes. I'm definitely in that group as well. For me, it was the scene with Ron and first couple of minutes with that hack. And as soon as he walks out of the coffee shop, I was just, this is my show. I am definitely watching this every week and along for the ride. So what was that moment for you?
you know, I got to tell you, you stole my thunder, and that is it. But I can be more specific. You know, unlike, I mentioned CSI Cyber.
Mm-hmm.
That's the first time I watched it. There was a webcam hack, and actually, like Mr. Robot, that webcam hack was seeded in a kernel of truth. At the time, there were some webcam vulnerabilities.
Mm-hmm.
But then everything about the scene in CSI Cyber was just not authentic. The type of cyber criminals, what they were doing, nothing about it was authentic. Within the first 5 minutes of just hearing Elliot's kind of monologue to himself, it felt authentic, the way he thought. I mean, if you remember in that scene, this whole thinking of, I come to this Ron's coffee shop because the Wi-Fi was fast. You know, that's something tech nerds think of, but then right away they get the hacking mentality right. He says something like, but it was so fast, it scratched the part of my mind that doesn't allow good to exist without a condition. And to me, right away, there's hacking mentality. You know, hackers see questions and things that some people just take for granted.
Mm-hmm.
So that got me right away. But then the other part of the scene that perhaps you relate to, too, is the fact they started talking about Tor networking. They, you know, not only did they introduce Tor, but within one line, they kind of defined it for the non-technical folks. So Tor was a shout out to us like nerds, but they also said it keeps servers anonymous, so it to kind of help along people that don't understand it. But meanwhile, you and I know a lot about Tor, and we understand what can happen besides good things, you know, escaping China's firewall. We understand the other things that might happen on the Onion routing protocol. So that right away then hooked me, and then the place that I was just in all the way was almost a throwaway line. I believe a line a lot of people don't really understand if they're just a normal viewer. And that's when he said, whoever's in control of the exit node is also control of traffic, which makes me the one in control.
Hmm.
And what I love about that is for people that are in InfoSec, in one line, the show's told us, we understand security, we understand what an exit node is, we know the vulnerabilities in Tor that people can use to... But they don't have to explain it in any way. And meanwhile, they packed enough in that scene that they still are kind of carrying along people that don't get it. While they may not know what the Onion Network is, they get enough of the gist that it's this anonymous network and this Ron dude is a sketchy dude doing some pretty gross stuff. So that was the scene that hooked me.
Yeah, and I definitely agree with you there. That's also one of the things that I love about the show, amongst the many things that I do love about the show, is that it never insults the intelligence of its audience, and that's with respect to the hacker community, but then also for those of us who aren't as involved in the InfoSec and the hacking community, those of us who may not get flat out right once he says Tor networking, but it does explain it to us, but also it does it in a way that you know what they're talking about already, but it also explains it in a way that kind of doesn't insult you guys as well. It gets the information across so that you guys can say, yeah, they got that right. And then those of us who aren't in the InfoSec community can say, oh, okay, now I get an understanding about what it is.
Layers of meaning. There's a top level where, you know, my wife, and by the way, I'm not insulting her intelligence, she's smarter than me in a lot of ways, but she could care less about information security. She kind of complains to me that when she hears me talk about my job, it's blah, 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 acronym this, acronym that. But even though she may not understand the technical aspects of the hack,
mm-hmm.
the show's given her enough to get the gist of what's going on, what the impact was. And meanwhile, like you say, they've thrown out little nuggets that they're not over-explaining, but they're pure shout-outs to everyone that does understand the details. So you're right on. That's part of why I absolutely love the show.
Yeah, and then also, to throw it back to the DEF CON panel, since you also were mentioning CSI Cyber, one moment that I loved during the Q&A portion of that panel is there was a guy in attendance at the panel who said that he was going to redirect all traffic to the CSI, because he owns, they were talking about the domains and IP addresses and everything, and so this guy says that he owns the domain, the IP, CSICyber.com, and he said, you know what, Monday morning I'm going to start redirecting all traffic. Anyone that goes to that website is going to go automatically to the Mr. Robot website. And
right. And he also claimed to have CSI Cyber 2, they stole this idea, right?
Yeah, he was saying back in he had the idea since 2008, and he was saying they stole my idea, so you know what, tough. Yeah, so anybody that goes to CSICyber.com is going to go right away to Mr. Robot. So as soon as I heard that, of course I had to type it in and see for sure if he meant what he said, and obviously, yep, he meant what he said. So anybody... yeah, definitely go check out CSICyber.com and you'll just be redirected to Mr. Robot. But yeah, that also kind of segues into another question that I had. Well, with your column, you love looking for the Easter eggs in the show. And I'm also again, referring to your column, if there's anything that I missed with an Easter egg or something like that, you definitely helped me out there with, so this is a real IP, especially with you saying, look for IP addresses. Anytime that you see an IP address is most likely real. So I'm also keeping an eye out for that as I continue to watch the show. Do you have a favorite Easter egg so far that you've come across during season 2?
Wow, it's like asking a dad that has kids his favorite baby. So I definitely follow the Easter eggs, but I'm getting too old and have too much of a day job to... The layers of Easter eggs that the showrunners and Adana and folks have hidden in this are just pretty darn impressive.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot that stand out, but you got to give credit to some communities that have gone even deeper than I. I do remember some of the first site Easter eggs I saw. I definitely, if you, besides checking out the IP addresses, always look at source.
Okay.
And realize, like, I might have talked in the article, you know, you can view source and you might see a little message in the source that's a shout out to you. But don't think that's the only layer. Usually there might actually be a piece of JavaScript on that page that's doing some more stuff. So, you know, if I remember right, there was one early on, I think, associated with the ransomware. It was relatively easy to find an IP address associated with the ransomware page,
mm-hmm.
and even put this laughing mask. But there was also a countdown, you know, and a lot of people probably thought that was kind of just a copy of the countdown where, you know, in this case, F Society had warned the folks at Evil Corp that if they didn't respond in a certain amount of time. But quickly, the community figured out that, you know, one, if you were patient enough to wait 24 hours for mm-hmm. that particular countdown, you would get more of a message that you could actually decode as well. But more importantly, if you actually viewed source and you actually checked out the JavaScript for that particular countdown, you can actually find the encoded message in there and have decrypted it before. And in the end, I'll try not to give too much away for audience that wants to go and look, but it was actually a fun little quote. So there's a lot like that. There's hidden things everywhere. And frankly, some, I get to a point where I see that there's more data and I just can't go further. So to answer for one of my favorites, it's a relatively recent one, but you know, I might be giving away my age. But I grew up, I'm a pretty older guy, so I grew up using a 2400 baud modem and logging on to BBSs. That's kind of how I started my path into hacking and information security. And so there was one of the IPs that actually redirected to a BBS, you know, a bulletin board system, a faked bulletin board system
mm-hmm.
that kind of emulated a 90s TV show forum.
Oh, yes, that one.
Yes. So if you read, and this, by the way, will also show why I'm not an Easter egg master, because I think there's a hidden message I have not cracked. But if you read all the parts of that form, you will get a little code that you can use, and you can enter it in this BBS, and you'll find a directory with a bunch of secret images. And the secret images are kind of fun. You might notice this season how Angela is kind of hacking her own brain to try to make herself a more powerful executive type, with inspirational tapes and messages. So the images on the surface look like just a lot of inspirational business sayings.
Mm-hmm.
But one thing interesting is out of the 8 images, one image is probably 10 times bigger than the others. So that's where my decoding stops. You know, I think a lot of people assume that there's something hidden in that picture.
Mm-hmm.
And by the way, you might have heard of steganography, which is the idea of hidden messages and other media content like pictures.
Yes.
The show has used that before.
Mm-hmm.
So that's definitely one of my favorites. And I still, you know, I'm not sure if anyone's figured out if that bigger image has meaning.
Okay, well, I'm definitely going to have to go back to that particular Easter egg and try it out again. Because, yeah, with me and most of these Easter eggs, I'm like you, I can only get so far. And then, you know, you're kind of thinking, okay, is that it? Or is there more? For me, I'm always thinking that there has to be more than, definitely a lot more to these Easter eggs, especially because given as far back as the season 2 trailer, there was even some, you know, kind of the Easter eggs hunt, the Easter eggs for season 2 started even as early as the trailer where saw that there was a phone number, and then it just led into, all right, you got the phone number, then you had to go to this, then it led you to something else, and then that led you to something else. Right. And so, yeah, but then...
But those something else's were other things that you could code break, believe it or not, besides just looking at the web page to get the hints and break the code that way.
Okay.
Again, if you have the skill to look at source, a lot of folks figured out those codes without even paying attention to the eyeball or the Morse code, for instance, and they actually decoded it from this. So there's a lot of different levels of how you hack them. By the way, did you catch another favorite? And by the way, this is one I totally would have missed if others hadn't caught it.
Mm-hmm.
I forget what episode it was, but there's an episode that started with this weird squelch of audio. Do you remember that one?
Yes, that's the episode right after he announces that he's going to hack the FBI. I think that was, it was not Master of Slaves, but the episode before that one. Logic Bomb, I think, was the episode.
And the beauty of that, I think, is some people might know, hopefully this is spoilers for anyone that wants to follow it, but the fact that if you brought that in an audio editor, it was actually just an image hidden in the spectra. There's like a spectra, a type of graph you can look at audio at, and there was a cute little hanging in there kitten that I think a lot of folks notice. And I don't know, since you were talking about the DEF CON people, Cora Donna at one point said, by the way, more stuff is coming. Hang in there.
Yes, I did catch that.
Beautiful callback to an Easter egg. So definitely layers to the show.
Yeah, most definitely. And then, I mean, with all these Easter eggs, I know that Cor was saying that you can expect maybe one or two Easter egg per episodes, and then there's supposed to be this big prize for some, you know, whoever is actually able to get through all these Easter eggs and everything. But yeah, I mean, one thing you cannot say about the show, it definitely leaves no stone unturned. But also, like, this is the type of show that lends itself to this type of interactivity. And Cor was even saying at DEF CON that he's wanted to do the Easter eggs as far back as season one, because, you know, he's well aware of the fact that people complained about the fact that they had to use a fake IP address for the whole DAT Val thing. And which also, I mean, if I ever had a chance to ask Cor, I should probably just ask him on Twitter. What are some of the Easter eggs that you would have created in season one had you been able to do it? Although, I don't know if he'll actually answer the question. But I am curious now to think. Okay, well, if you had the ability to do it, what would you have done? But he was saying initially that the Easter eggs, the idea of wanting to do it, came about. Was mostly inspired by this, the whole thing with DEF CON and the badges that you get at every single DEF CON. And there's this whole code, this whole cracking this code thing with the badges, as far as that goes. But you've been to DEF CON a lot. What can you tell us about the badge, cracking the DEF code, the DEF CON badge?
So yeah, this is, and frankly, that's why the Easter eggs are so cool for his audience. I mean, you can tell the show, and he really gets hacker culture, because these type of puzzles are exactly what, and by the way, when we say hacker, and nowadays media has a negative connotation, like there are always criminal, you know, network actors,
mm-hmm.
But in the past, hacker was kind of an honorific giving to anybody that kind of found unusual solutions. So DEF CON has been doing it for ages. Like, for instance, I think in one of my articles, I showed a picture of this year's badge, and it was really hard to take a picture of a certain part of it, but if you actually saw the badge, it had some very light silk screening, which had about three different, like, codes on that particular badge, number letter sequences. And that was the first step to a very long hacking competition. Like, you would have to basically use cryptographic tricks to kind of decode that particular message, which would lead you to another message, and so on and so forth. And very much like the show's doing, it wasn't just one layer of puzzles. You tend to have to solve multiple things. And DEF CON's been doing this for years. I remember even, you know, I have been going for over 10 years back when they were in a small hotel in Alexis Park. And they used to have even Wi-Fi hacking competitions where not only were you just doing Wi-Fi hacking, but part of it was also doing code breaking to get to the next step, to the next step. So it really is kind of in honor of these hacking competitions that they have at DEF CON that really, you know, a lot of crackers and hackers are really puzzle solving, people that try to find answers where other people may not even see questions. So it's really something they love to do. And by the way, you keep on mentioning the big show thing. You probably heard this, but one of the tips that I think Cora has mentioned for this particular big hacking competition is all these individual Easter eggs that you can take to a certain point to get the codes, get something. You're not going to be able to find the final answer unless you put all of those together. Yeah. So I think we're going to find that all these individual Easter eggs will add up to one big puzzle, which is very much in like the way the badge competition and other hacking competitions work at DEF CON.
Okay. I mean, it is a lot to take in, but I'm definitely having fun watching people solve the Easter eggs. And I mean, yeah, I mean, my brain, I like to think that I'm analytical and everything, but yeah, I don't even know if I probably with time I could train my brain to think about things in the way that you do as well. But I mean, just looking at these Easter eggs and you're just thinking with Core and you're just, how do you come up with this stuff?
Yes.
I mean,
a very good team of consultants.
I mean, it's enough that he puts in so much work into getting the animations and everything for the hacks, right? I mean, they said at he explained at DEF CON panel that everything is basically centered around the story, and then they will have to meet together, figure out what hack can we use for this particular situation in the show. And also, I'm not sure if most people will know that basically once they use a particular hack, they will not use the same one again. Yeah, and then also they're having to keep everything in mind with the timeline that the show is in. So everything has to, the show is still in the year 2015. So they're having to make sure that everything is up to snuff for that time period. So that just adds on extra. But I mean, I tip my hat.
There's accuracy to that too. For instance, I can't remember if it was the episode before when Trenton hacks Mobley's phone using an exploit called StageFright, I should say. In that particular flashback, we're seen before 2015, because we see it's a flashback to Mobley and Trenton and Darlene meeting for the first time. So it's kind of double accuracy there, because if that were 2015, StageFright, the exploit they used would have been patched, and it wouldn't have been as quite as easy to exploit that against Mobley. But because they actually are paying so much attention to time, that wouldn't have been patched earlier. So I don't know how, whoever deals with continuity on this show, oh my goodness, my head would explode, even though I think I'm a relatively intelligent dude.
But yeah, I mean, and then also for the amount of work that they put in, and Core has even said, you know, the amount of hours and hours and hours that they'll put in, and for the most part, it might only end up on screen for what, 10 seconds at the most. I mean, again, I just tip my hat off to them as well. And then also for you for just going through each episode and picking out everything for the accuracy. But you're also, like everybody else, you're not immune to wanting to predict things that are going to happen as the show progresses. And before season two premiered, you put out an article about four predictions that you stated, all right, these, look out for these possibilities. These things may happen. One of them was that we might see state-nation hacking.
As we talked about in the industry.
Yeah, you said that we might see that. You also predicted that Angela was going to become the insider, a whistleblower of sorts. Then you also predicted that E-Corp's data might come back. And then your final prediction And then also, I think fourth prediction you have was that the cyber police were going to come in. So at this point in the season, I think that we're about 3 for 4 for your predictions right there. So is there anything that you, kind of just to get inside your head a little bit more, what are you looking for and when you're sitting down and wanting to get your own predictions out?
Well, really, the one thing I could tell even in season one of the show is part of why the showrunners and Corydon and Sam get it so well is they've paid attention to the news. You know, Sam's talked about the Arab Spring. They obviously follow DEFCON and hacking news. So most of my predictions were really kind of grounded in reality around what kinds of things can happen. So nation-state hackers, you know, you cannot follow security news nowadays and not realize that there are definitely governments, ever since even our government was Stuxnet, there are governments that are creating red teams that are hacking. You see the rumors all the time about Russia did this or China did this. Mm-hmm. So, and oftentimes, if you follow some of those threat actors in the security community, you see what are Chinese name groups similar to Anonymous, but really they're actually tied to state-sponsored hacking, you know. And for instance, there's something called APT-28, a unit in China that really is part of the People's Liberation Army. So the nation state hacking was largely because of Wyatt and Royce, you know, and the Dark Army. It seemed pretty, and of course the end scene with Price and White Rose, that's really what kind of hammered it home, that there's some alternative motive here, and it's not just F Society trying to save the 99%. There's actually a government that has a reason to help this along. And I think with White Royce being the Minister of State for China or State Security, I think that one's pretty solid. So that kind of thing, just grounding it in reality. For Angela being an insider, similar thing, insider attacks happen a lot. And that one I was afraid. I think at the beginning of this season, it's taken a while for Corydon and Eshmel to answer some of these kind of left cliffhangers. And obviously, Angela seems at least a little bit tempted by her new power. And yet I think it's now clear that she really still does want to kind of get E-Court for her father. Now, the one prediction you might have given me credit for that I kind of give myself half a credit is I did predict the knock on the door was the cyber police. Mm-hmm. And I did even predict that it would have to do with Flipper, which I think we all found in the jail episode. But the one part of that prediction I don't think the show, they didn't rule it out, but I don't think they'll ever answer, was I figured the smoking gun that would bring the police and give them enough evidence to arrest Elliot for Flipper would have to do with the fact that the dog was chipped. Mm-hmm. And that the original owner, Kristen's boyfriend, would have had that chip in the database, and when Elliot visited the vet, there would have been a recording of the visit tying the dog to this previous owner. So that's how I thought that they might catch Elliot, and they didn't really answer how they caught Elliot, how they, you know, if you remember season one, at the time they didn't have enough evidence. The boyfriend thought it was Elliot, but the police said he didn't have enough evidence. And they kind of, the reason they didn't answer that question was because Elliot answered guilty. We never got to see the evidence the police had. So I only give myself half right there. But I still, so the final one, the one that I don't think is answered, is in the first, the 5-9 hack was all about, you know, destroying E-Corp's data on the 99%, so all our loans and all the money we owe would be hard to be tracked. And the one thing that always surprised me in the first episode was Darlene and Elliot, rather than just designing malware that deleted all this data after they deleted the backups, they specifically encrypted the data. And that doesn't make sense to me, because encrypting the data technically would take longer than even securely deleting it, in my opinion. So whenever the show does anything, at this point, I feel like the showrunners have a reason. So to me, I'm still curious why the data was encrypted instead of deleted. And that's why I still suspect that somehow that data might come back. Perhaps the encryption was the Dark Army and White Royce. You know, maybe they want to, after they, I don't know, adjust eCoin and make some money off that, they might want to bring the data back. But something about encrypting the data just rubs me the wrong way.
Yeah, I definitely remember you mentioning, definitely talking a lot about, okay, why encrypt rather than delete? But yeah, I mean, Yeah, you're definitely right there with knowing the show and that everything that we see, everything that we don't see, it's for a reason. So yeah, definitely with watching the show, it's definitely one that keeps us on our toes. So you're having to think, okay, we didn't necessarily get this, you know, but then it also leaves you with a little bit of uncertainty where you're like, okay, is this a 100% resolved? Are we sure we're done with that? So that's just one of the things with this show, like with it getting too, with this show, you're in your head way too much and you're just like, all right, resolved.
You called it.
Yeah.
Easter eggs too. I mean, people are so used to finding all the hidden clues they're burying that I think we're starting to get paranoid and we're starting to read meaning into things that may not have meaning just because we're so trained to catch all these small details.
For sure. And then, it's also trying to be on alert for things that information that you're not necessarily shown. Like you were saying with the audio that ended up being the cat hang in there photo. But then also, yeah, with this show, I mean, I don't know if you've, have you been able to make any more recent predictions for the final three episodes thus far?
Oh gosh, I haven't yet. I mean, the one thing about my article series, by the way, is the whole premise of the series is to talk mostly about the hacks and technology,
mm-hmm.
but obviously there's a lot of amazing story points happening, so the hardest part about that article series is for me just not to talk about some of the crazy stuff that's happening. So, of course, what's with the factory? There's the factory that mm-hmm. really is why Elliot and Angela's parents got sick and died, that we now learn that White Rose has something to do with. And what is happening in that factory? You know, everything from, okay, is there something radioactive there? Does it have something to do with China trying to get nuclear arms? Is it maybe not radioactive? Is it some sort of science experiment? It could have to do with various mining situations. So I definitely have thoughts around those. But like you, I'm in the state of confusion. And frankly, I think the show wants us there. You know, a lot of times when I see the tweets of folks saying, what's going on? I don't get it. And I think, that's on purpose. I think Eshmel and them right now want us to be questioning everything.
Yeah. And then also it's even interesting too, where you'll look through Twitter or even Reddit and you'll see people that are just, all right, here's my theory, or this is it. I'm calling it right now on this. The prison theory, I mean, well up until that reveal, I didn't want to be on board with it, but of course watching the show during season two, and then even going back into season one, I would say that even as far back as season one, there were some of those prison references. So, yeah. I mean, for me, even though I wasn't on board with...
The community got really quickly. I don't know, even in my first episode or article, I wanted to write about that, but unfortunately my articles get kind of long. But I think around the third, I had mentioned jail/mental institute.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know, there's one very cool Green Day song, but we didn't even talk about the great music the show uses.
Yes.
But, you know, if you saw the video related with this song they used, and the actual video for it was shooting in a jail/mental institute Green Day with some masks on that looked very familiar. I mean, not exact. So it just blows me away the amount of references that even help give you hints to what's really going on.
Yeah, even with since you bring up the music, a lot of people they did mention the lullaby version of Basket Case for Green Day, and then a lot of people also referenced Phil Collins' "Take Me Home." They were just, well, this song is about a guy who's in a mental institution, so they were just, come on, he's giving it right there. You know, guys, you know that he's not really home. Again, with just one of the, I mean, this just goes out to really the brilliance of Sam Esmail and everyone behind the show, that even if you may not be initially like on board with the theory or anything like that, you know, in the event that it happens, like the prison reveal, I remember when the reveal happened, I was screaming at my TV, but then after a while, I'm like, Sam Esmail, you, I'm like, all right, you still got me. But that just, again, just goes to show the brilliance of it, that even though you can see the references, the way that the reveal happened, it was just like, once again, I tip my hat off to you, Sam. But yeah, but since so, you...
This is a theory, but I think it's kind of a challenge. I think Sam Eshmal has a challenge, because if you look at what he's doing, he's kind of doing a Sixth Sense.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you remember the Sixth Sense movie, we all watched it, and I would say most people never got the twists,
mm-hmm.
but then they show all the scenes over again, and they show all the little hidden references that they had put in there before that would help you understand why the twist totally worked.
Yeah,
but I feel like, and maybe that's what you're saying too, that's what Sam is doing. All these little things he has varied are so after we all learn it's in jail, we can go back and we can see, oh, look, there's a reference. But the problem is, he's trained this community to look for those, so it's almost impossible for him to get some of the little hidden things that he has to put in there past us on the first viewing, you know what I mean?
So yeah.
He's trying to do that, go back and see, and it will all make sense. But now there's people in the community that are catching it before they even have the opportunity to go back and see, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it definitely does. And going through some other articles where they were talking interviews with Sam after the reveal, the prison reveal happened, and once you do see the reveal, you're just, all right, yeah, the breadcrumbs were there. I should have seen it. And also, I guess maybe this is me being stubborn as I am sometimes, that sometimes I want to ignore it and just kind of just, you know, be in that moment. Like, I guess kind of be in that moment with Elliot when he, it was revealed about the whole thing with Mr. Robot. But then also... Yeah. But what was so brilliant about that was that the whole Darlene reveal, that's the one where everyone was just...
No one got that.
Everyone was like, what? So, I mean, on one hand, I'm kind of almost expecting that to happen, but...
It's another one. The jail
yeah.
is not the only surprise.
Yeah, I mean, I keep hearing from other stuff that I've read, I keep hearing that there's this thing that's going to... no one has been able to guess where... there's going to be something going down with Angela that no one is going to be able to guess once it's revealed to us. But I just love with Angela how she's been playing that... how she's been walking that fine line where you never really know... I wish someone would be able to say how they think that her character is going, but I mean, I am curious to find out, though.
I don't know for sure if she's this white hat insider, because as I mentioned, she's tempted by the dark side, so to speak. You can definitely, and I spend so much time talking about the tech, but the nuance they put in these characters, you know, I think that's another big question they explore is good and bad. While on one hand, there might be things that seem outright evil, even people like Price have nuance to him. He, for the most part, is bad, but, you know, to him, he may not see himself that way. And Angela, starting out as kind of this milquetoast, goody-two-shoes character and really kind of evolving into these shades of, you know, liking the fact that she can have control. It's definitely... It's great to watch, and it makes it much harder to predict whether she's going to go one way or the other.
Yeah, especially with the whole, just the many layers to all these characters. And then I remember even watching the Mr. Robot Decoded special where they were talking with regards to F Society and the idea, and they were explaining white hat hackers, black hat, and then explaining that in reference to F Society, and they were saying that so far as we've been progressing, it's pretty much getting to the point where they're even F Society is kind of going in that gray area there where...
Darlene certainly did, right?
Oh my God, Darlene. I mean, Darlene, I kind of figured that there was, that she could have gone there, but the fact that she didn't, I mean, again, just my hats off to everyone in the show with being able to add all these layers and peel these layers back to these characters. And that's just one of the many things I love about the show is that you, just when you think you have a character pinpointed, or when you think you have an idea of where the show is going to go, it completely goes in the opposite, in the direction that you didn't think it was going to go, but it's still able to keep you on that roller coaster ride throughout, you know, for the rest of the ride.
Exactly.
Yeah. And then, two more questions, really, because I do also want to go back to talk. Well, since we're talking about the music now, any favorite songs that were,
You named two of my favorites, but I have to admit there's a little Depeche Mode in the last episode, and while I haven't really drawn any parallels to, you know, if there is any meaning to that song, just because of my era, I kind of really like the Depeche Mode call out. And by the way, that's another thing I appreciate. There's probably people of many different generations watching that can love it, especially for what's going on in 2015.
Mm-hmm.
But Depeche Mode, their 80s and 90s references, you know, I talk a lot about the tech and the hacking accuracy, but this show polishes everything, you
mm-hmm.
know, down to the composition, to the shots, to the props that are in scenes during different eras. So, you know, just having the Depeche Mode reference to me kind of fit pretty well in the whole zeitgeist of the show. So I definitely like that particular last episode.
Most definitely. Yeah, the last episode, as soon as I heard the Depeche Mode, I nearly started fangirling again, because I'm a huge Depeche Mode fan. But and then also with the show and the music choices, not only I was talking to another podcast about with that the show just goes above and beyond with the music choices, and that it's not just something that's going to fill between one scene going to the next, is that it's something that adds to the story. And I think for me, really, with the use of Depeche Mode and Walking in My Shoes, I mean, we've already had Elliot reveal what he's actually been going through for the past 86 days. And, you know, he said, "I hope you guys don't stay mad at me for too long." And then with the lyrics, starting off with, you know, saying, I would tell you about the things and then all this, I'm not asking for absolution. It's pretty much like, with Elliot, I think that sometimes as an audience, we may be able to be a little bit too harsh on Elliot sometimes, because I think that in watching whatever it is he's going through, he's sometimes trying to, I guess, recall certain things that he forgets himself. So with the use of that Depeche Mode song, it's almost like, well, you know, before you try to judge me or anything like that, try going through exactly what I'm going through right now. And then,
obviously there's clearly something going on with him and Mr. Robot, the overheating, I think it kind of shows that he can't always tell us the truth, because he doesn't even realize the truth himself in some cases.
Right. Oh yeah, exactly. And then also, of course, this season's kind of been called out with, you know, complaints about the pacing and everything. And I remember even Kaur talked about this at the DEF CON panel, saying that, you know, Elliot went through this huge reveal himself, you know, this huge internal crisis of realizing that here's this person that he thought was real, and it turns out that that's not. So how would you deal with that if you were in his shoes, pretty much? But then it's also, you know, it's also interesting to me in a way that the show would kind of get a little bit of criticism in terms of how they're handling that, because I remember a lot of people have praised the show in terms of how it's dealt with the depiction of mental illness. And I know that Rami and Sam and everybody just put so much work into getting that portrayed as accurately as they can. So I would...
Even drug addiction, by the way. I've had friends who've watched the show and were almost uncomfortable about how Elliot, some of his drug addiction passing before, and how he handled morphine and stuff like that. But not because they got it wrong, but because it was almost too close to home with someone they knew. So, like I said, they polish and they get almost every aspect of the show accurate, as you're saying.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, again, and I even joked and tweeted, and this is completely true, that it's just always going to be that as we get close to the end of the seasons, I'm always going to be at that point where I start off the season sitting on the corner of my bed watching the episode, and then as we get closer to the end, I'm always standing in front of my TV. I can't sit down anymore while I watch it. When things start getting that intense on the show, like, yep, I'm standing in front of my TV, and then I kind of use the commercial breaks to pace around and kind of make sense of whatever it is I just saw.
Sweet Party Kid, by the way, with friends. That's something I've started to do. It's one I watch all the time with my wife, and she's not much of a TV person, but she absolutely loves this show. So definitely have started a few viewing parties with friends.
I don't know that most of my friends do not watch the show. Well, my mom watches it. I'll watch the show with my mom, but what I'll do is that I'll watch the show on my own first, and recorded, and then we'll just go ahead and watch it later together. So it's pretty funny where she'll be watching it. She'll get really into it, but she'll also ask, she'll try to make her predictions beforehand and call it out to me, and it's just, I'm not going to tell you. You have to watch. So it's really funny. I mean, I would, one of these days I'm going to have to try and get her to watch an episode with me as it's going on. But yeah, I could ask her, I'm like, you didn't hear me yelling at the TV? You didn't hear me cursing at this at the TV when this happened? But yeah, because I could be a little animated sometimes when I'm watching TV, certain shows. But yeah, but I'm just prepared for the upcoming final episodes to be standing in front of the TV, possibly screaming at it, and probably have my mouth to the floor.
And I think you're right, because it sounds like you followed so much Sam Eshmail's interviews, and you probably know that this was originally what he called a three-act classic movie.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he described season one as being act one.
Yeah.
And in a traditional movie season, you know, act two is when the real problem and the real, the crap hits the fan, so to speak. So I don't know if we've really seen, so obviously season two could potentially be that big issue that he alluded to. And while we've seen some pretty big deals, I don't know if we've gotten the major thing yet. So I think we're in for a roller coaster ride the next three shows.
Most definitely. And then, nothing really has been said that much about what season three is going to be like, but, I do remember Sam saying that he would like to take a longer break in between seasons two and three, which I say, yes, do that, because
get it good.
Yeah, I mean, I was like, Sam, you, yes, I was like, Sam, go ahead, take as long as you need. You deserve it. I mean, not only has he continued being the showrunner, but he's in the writer's room. He directed all the episodes. So, I mean,
yeah, this was a hard season for him compared to the first, with the directing on top of it all.
Yeah, and even everyone in the cast has said they have no idea how he managed to pull it off. But he has said that directing every episode for season three is something that he would like to continue. So, yeah, definitely take your time with it, and especially because a lot of people don't want, you know, what happened with True Detective to happen to this show. I say take the time, Sam.
I feel good about this, though, by the way. I mean, part of why I bring up is it was an original movie. Like, the one thing I was worried about, or what you might worry about, is remember Lost. Lost had a lot of fun puzzles and interesting things.
Yes.
Ultimately, I believe the writers of Lost, they never had an end game in mind when they started, and it all kind of, from the outside in, it seemed to kind of happen organically, and that's why we were left with many unsolved things. Whereas the one thing I feel good about with Eshmail is, even if, you know, he had this three-act movie, he knows what the core storyline and ending is.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it will go more than three seasons, so they can extend it and tell it in a longer form. But I feel like all this stuff that they're putting in there is not going to have that Lost ending. There will be some sort of final, you know, we'll all get it at the end. That's my hope anyways.
Yeah, I definitely think so. And it definitely, you can see it. You know that they do have that end game, and you can definitely see it as the season progresses. So it's always like I tell people, you know, kind of keep having to remind people, it has an end game, people. We know, you know, that they know where they're going, you know, just go with it. Go along with the ride. And
not to know sometimes. They want you to be there because that's part of the suspense.
Yeah, for as much as I dive into everything, I tell people all the time, I'm like, they'll ask me if I have any theories, and I'm kind of like, I don't know if I want to put that pressure on, that added pressure on my brain to think of a theory. I'm kind of, you know, just like being in the moment, and maybe every now and then I'll try to make a minor prediction here and there, but yeah, for the most part, it's, I definitely like to obviously watch every show, but I also like to look at it from the character analysis and all that point and story analysis point of view. So that's mostly where I come from with that. But as far as for however many seasons to tell the story, I know that Sam has said that said early on back in season one that he sees it going for anywhere between 4 to 5 seasons total. So We already know that we're kind of halfway there now that season 3 has been renewed. So it's just, I guess, a matter of time of us figuring out, is it going to be 4 or is it going to be 5? So, but yeah, but he has that end game there. So I'm just curious to see, again, being along with that ride and knowing exactly and figuring out exactly where it's going to go. But yeah, my last question. I know that Andre McGregor, who was also at the DEF CON panel for Mr. Robot, and Core, they've mentioned on podcasts and also at the DEF CON panel that if anyone in the community had any tools or hacks that they can, you know, that off the top of their head or whatever they can think of, yeah, to just submit them to them and let them know. And maybe there could be a chance that they might end up in the show. Have you already started a list for any tools and hacks that you would like to see in the show?
So actually, yeah, I have a small list going of both the, like, some of my ideas may not even pass my, is this perfectly accurate today? Because if you watch the show, their hacks are a mix of 100% real. And by that, I mean, in some cases, as you know from the DEF CON panel, we may not know this, but one of their, you know, maybe Jeff Moss or one of the other folks that they have consulting has actually done one of these Android hacks, and they've done a real-life hack how it would really work so that they could create the animation you mentioned in the show.
Mm-hmm.
On the flip side, some of the hacks they use are theoretical in that they're discussing concepts that could work, but it hasn't really happened in the real world. So I definitely have a mix of hacks, and some of the ones that I think are kind of cooler and I might be more interesting from a story perspective, or theoretically very possible,
okay,
but I haven't seen a real-world example of that hack, so I'm not sure if it would go through. But there, I have a feeling that Core gets a ton, so I don't know how neat mine would be. But I have been chatting with him on Twitter, and I think in the future there's a couple I want to recommend to him. But, you know, there's tons of obvious ones that you know, there's people that have done research in the streetlights, and they, you can actually, based on pressure sensors in the road, the streetlight actually gets feedback from how many cars might be waiting at a stop based on pressure sensors that wirelessly talk to the streetlight. And of course, hackers have figured out this wireless protocol and figured out how to tell the streetlight to get it to change the color simply by tricking it and thinking there's tons of cars waiting. So there's things people could do if there's ever a chase scene. You could certainly figure out how to mess with streetlights. There's all kinds of hardware hacking that they haven't explored. Some they've explored just by, like for instance, the Internet of Things hack when the smart home got hacked. While they did kind of allude that was a hack, they really didn't show any technical detail about it.
Mm-hmm.
So there's certainly certain internet devices. For instance, we found that fridges can be hacked. There's a lot of smart fridges that record what's in your refrigerator, and they just run embedded Linux systems. And a lot of people kind of joke about, why would I want to hack your refrigerator? And on the, you know, in the show, the hack just made someone uncomfortable at home, and it didn't seem that dangerous. But they don't show the other side of that, which is, I want to hack your refrigerator, not because I care anything about your refrigerator, but because now I have a little bug on your internal network. That's just a Linux computer sitting in your network. So just like the femtocell hack, now I have this hidden device in your network I can use to actually hack everything else in your network. So there's definitely all kinds of stories like that, and there's a few that I'm keeping to myself that I might actually tell Core about.
Yeah,
but I also have a feeling he has endless amazing consultants, so I don't know if he has any limit of hacking ideas. It may be, I hear that sometimes he wants to show cool products like he has in the past with the Bony Phone.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that's a little harder for him because then he has to get companies legal involved.
Yeah.
In fact, I won't disclose the name of the company, but while I was in line for that particular panel at DEF CON, there is a company that deals in the Bitcoin wallet, and they actually have software for a Bitcoin wallet. And I think the show actually wanted to use that particular product, but this guy who was actually from the company said, unfortunately, they would have loved it. They love Mr. Robot, but the company didn't want to actually show their wallet in a particular way.
Uh-huh.
So I think that...
Yeah, that's unfortunate. I mean, I know that that's something that Core brought up a lot, saying that, you know, there are these companies and tools that they would like to use, but, you know, no one wants to be kind of perceived in a negative way, and everything. But But yeah, I mean,
on the inside, they've shown things good too. Like one of my favorite hacks had to do with a failed hack.
Mm-hmm.
So in some cases, like a security company, right? You remember Avira was an antivirus product that actually popped up that blocked one of Darlene's first Trojans when they were trying to hack the police.
Yes, I remember that. Yeah, so, I mean, I don't know, maybe as the show progresses and maybe they'll get a little bit more clearance along the way, but yeah, I mean, it's not always negative that, you know, your tool might be used.
The issue I have with hacks, some of the really cool hacks are really technically complex, and we're starting to see that with the Femdecel heist, so I think it's really fascinating how the show's balancing, like, some of the cooler hacks I just think would be a challenge for the show to, you know, do what we talked about, which is get enough of the hack to be understood by the normal audience without having to spend tons of time on it, because most of the hacks we see last for a few seconds.
Mm-hmm.
They still somehow are able to convey. They don't interrupt the pacing of the story. So I have to admit, a lot of my cooler hacks, I feel like they might be a little complex, and I'm not sure if they would be as good for TV, so to speak.
Yeah, well, I still encourage you to go ahead and submit them anyway. You never know unless you try.
I think you're exactly right.
Yeah. And then also, I mean, if it does make it on, you'll have that bragging right forever.
That would be very cool. I have to admit, now that he has such good consultants, but in season 1 when I did this, my dream would have been a consultant along with Coradonna. That seems like a tough job, although I have a feeling every interview I see them in now, they're saying, well, I just came out of production, so probably a pretty busy life.
Yeah, I mean, what is it? I know Andre was saying how, that he'll get a text, you know, he'll get calls at 4 a.m. in the morning. Well, I need this within like an hour. But again,
Andre, by the way, if people don't know, he's more along the lines of their FBI cyber consultant.
Yes.
And I have to admit, you know, like criminal prosecution and FBI procedures I know a bit about, but it's not my strong point. But I had a strong feeling during the you know, showing us the legal process in jail and even other scenes with Dom, that they get all that process accurate too. So, and I think that's in a large part to his input.
Yeah, definitely. And it just goes to show that this show pays so much attention to the detail, not just on the tech and the hacking, but if you're going to bring in the law enforcement, they definitely want to go ahead and get that right as well, because, you know, Dom could have easily been, you know, cliche character and everything, but even she, I mean, she's incredible.
She
yeah.
Because I'm an Elliot fan, I like her so much. I feel like she's going to be Elliot's nemesis, but I can't help but love her.
Yes, I was just saying that too, that, I mean, I have moments when I love her, but then I also have moments where I'm just, no, you want to catch F Society. I don't want you to succeed. But Dom is just, I mean, I was saying the other day that, I mean, I find her when she's interacting with anybody that she's talking to, in terms of trying to get information out of them, or just, even in the small moments where she's talking with Angelo, I was just, Dom is very disarming, you know, trying to pack on that charm, like, hey, I brought you food, your favorite food. But then she sits down in the room and eats the sandwich. And I was just, you said you bought that for Angela, but you're sitting there eating it. But I do love Dom. Dom is a character I'm on the fence about. I love her, but then I also don't want her to succeed. So,
but maybe, I guess this could be a prediction. Maybe she's smart enough that she... I think one thing we might say is while F Society had a lot to do with the 5-9 hack, there are real bad guys pulling the strings behind the scenes. And maybe Dom is smart enough to be able to separate F Society, who might be more the pawns than they believe,
mm-hmm.
the real bad guys. And in the end, maybe, who knows, maybe Elliot and Dom could team up to get the real bad guys.
That is true. I have seen a lot of people, that question has come up a lot too, because again, with the show this season having the chess references show up a lot, there's that question of who's playing who, who's the pawn, and I've even questioned, are, you know, you could probably easily say, oh, Angela's a pawn or Elliot's a pawn, but then I'm also sometimes wondering, are, you know, in terms of which chess piece we as an audience tend to be assigning them to, could those roles be changing? Could Angela at some points be the queen? You know, I mean, it's, yeah, that's just, again, my brain going.
Again,
yeah, just constantly, which is, again, why the show is so amazing, that it just makes you do that. And as much as you try to stop yourself from doing it, you can't help but do it.
Yep.
But yeah. All right. But yeah, I don't want to take up too much more of your time, but thank you so much for, yeah, just clearing out some time in your schedule to talk with me about your column and your love of Mr. Robot.
No problem. It's always a pleasure to geek out over a shared passion.
Definitely. And of course, as the season continues to progress, we'll definitely be chatting on Twitter every now and then. If another one of your predictions comes true, I'll be like, you called it again.
So cross my fingers.
Yeah, crossing your fingers for all of that. It definitely would be I'm keeping an eye out, especially for that E-Corp data prediction that you got there.
If that doesn't come back in some way, I do think it's kind of a misstep. It would be an unusual step to have done that rather than destroyed, in my opinion.
Yeah, well, we'll definitely see how that plays out. But again, thanks so much for joining me. And yeah, we'll definitely keep watching Mr. Robot and having our brains turn to mush in the process.
Thank you, Andrea.
All right, thank you. Here's a little ghost for the offering. Yeah, 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 yeah. Here's a truck stop instead of St. Peter's. Yeah, 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 yeah. Mr. Andy Kaufman's gone wrestling. Yeah, yeah.